Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Thank you for joining us. And during this holiday season, we got bowl games going on. We've been keeping an eye on the illustrious Heart of Dallas Bowl and Pinstripe Bowl and the ironically snowy Sun Bowl.
Of those three, only one actually has anything resembling a semblance of history, of course. The Sun Bowl at least has a decent history to it, but like you say, ironically named. And it seems like a lot of, about half the time, you're talking about the Sun Bowl being played in under gray skies, or in today's case, snowfall going back over the years. I remember when I was a kid watching Oklahoma State and West Virginia in the Snow Bowl, and what was the Sun Bowl? It might as well have been the Snow Bowl, because the field was covered in snow. And that game also featured a young Barry Sanders and a young Thurman Thomas both played in that game.
Yeah, I don't remember that game, I'm not going to lie. But
you weren't even a figment of anyone's imagination when that game happened.
No, I was not.
Just means I'm old.
Nah, I wouldn't say that. Well, we got a little break on Friday, Christmas Day. Because of the Monday Night Football game, it just so happens that the schedule works out that we could afford to take a day off. The football team got a day off, a rare one. And we were back to work on Saturday here at the facility. And we got a little bit of good news. It seems like both the safeties will be ready.
Yeah, both the starting safeties, of course, they'll be down. David Bruton Jr., which is going to cause some changes in the sub package that the Broncos often use. But Darian's
Omar Bolden out.
Yeah, you'll probably still see a lot of Josh Bush, it would seem. But Darian Stewart and TJ Ward's the first time they've practiced together since the end of November. Of course, it would be the November 27th practice. Then TJ was hurt, sprained his ankle, November 29th against the Patriots. And then Darian Stewart, he missed the first couple of days of practice this week while he was recovering from a hamstring injury. TJ Ward, this was his third practice on Saturday. He practiced Wednesday and Thursday. Looks like both are going to play. They're both listed as questionable, but all signs are they're going to be in uniform. And while the Broncos did catch a little bit of a break for their safeties in Tyler Eifert, the outstanding tight end for the Bengals, being ruled out, certainly it's going to help the entire defense overall to have their starting safeties back.
And this game's a big one to have them back. We've talked about playoff scenarios, and it seems like every week we're talking about, well, this game is a big one for them to get control of their own destiny. But this one is bigger than all of those, because if they win it, then they hold the tiebreaker over the Bengals, and then just have to beat a pretty weak Chargers team to finish off and, you know, get that first round bye. However, right, you lose it, and, you know, all bets are off. You could go anywhere from, well, depending on what the Patriots do, from a first seed to all the way to the bottom to out at 11-5, which would be, I think, the third time in NFL history that that's happened, or AFC history, I think.
Yeah, I think I want to say NFL history as well. I don't think an NFC team has missed at 11-5, of course, since they went to the 16-game schedule in 1978. Don't want to think about that, but it's a realistic possibility, certainly, because all it would take for the Broncos to miss the playoffs is a loss in one of these last two games for them, and for the Steelers, Chiefs, and Jets to win out. Steelers play the Ravens and the Browns. The Chiefs play the Browns and the Raiders. The Jets play the Patriots and the Bills. The Jets would certainly appear to have the tougher road, but at the same time, they played the Patriots tough the last time and narrowly lost the Bills. And the Jets would obviously have more motivation in that Week 17 rematch. So, frankly, if the Jets do upset the Patriots Sunday afternoon, the Broncos have to have the mindset going into Monday Night Football that they can't that they can't afford a loss, that they have run out of second chances. And I think there's been that sense of urgency around the Broncos this week. Not that it's paralyzing them, not that they're overcome with fear, you know, or self-doubt or anything like that, but certainly there seems to be a pretty clear mentality that they've used up their mulligans. They've got to get it done, or they might be sitting at home in January.
And the team that would come up from behind to get them would be the Chiefs, who have been on an incredible run. I think 8 weeks in a row they've won games where they haven't lost in 8 weeks. And even without Justin Houston for a little stretch there, I mean, they're helped by a weak schedule, of course, but that they've been able to keep that concentration, keep that focus for this long, and kind of overcome an early five-game losing streak that would, I would think, would doom a lot of teams. They've managed to, you know, now they're only one game back from the Broncos, so.
Overcoming an early losing streak and also overcoming the loss of Jamaal Charles. But
I think
in a way, that made the Chiefs better because I think they lean too much on Jamaal Charles, not only on the ground but as a target coming out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times, whether you're talking about invention or innovation, a lot of times it takes a stressful situation or losing something to spur, you know, creativity, whether you're talking about, you know, whether you're talking about life itself or you're just talking about football. And the Chiefs, for their offense, they were forced to diversify once Charles went down. And it's made them tougher to stop. Even some of the Broncos defenders talked about that going into their game on November 15th, how it was and at that point, the Chiefs had only gotten a 3-5 when they were coming into Denver. But they looked at those first two wins of what has become an 8-game streak and said, hey, they're spreading the ball out. And, you know, it used to be you knew Jamaal Charles, he was going to get the ball more often than not. And now you had to focus on so many other guys. So they've kept teams off balance. And look at most of their – if you look at most of their outputs during their 8-game winning streak, obviously they were helped a bit by a couple of defensive touchdowns last week, but they're scoring 23, 45, 29, 33, 30, 34, 10 points, the exception against San Diego, whose defense is playing pretty well recently, and Baltimore 34 last week with the aid of two defensive touchdowns. So they're putting some good numbers on the board, in part because they're keeping teams off balance. They're going, if they make the playoffs, they're going to be a very, very tough team to knock out. And the Broncos now have some pressure on them because the Chiefs win any tiebreaker on division record. So that's why the Broncos, as I say, they've used up their mulligans, can't afford another defeat.
And there's that quote. It's like innovation is like 99% perspiration, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. And before they lost Jamaal Charles, it was him and Travis Kelce as their top receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And now Jeremy Maclin's really paid off. He's almost at 1,000 yards receiving through mm-hmm. 15 weeks. And it seems like, you know, Alex Smith not being able to lean on checkdowns to Jamaal Charles or screens to Jamaal Charles, for better or worse, has really made him look downfield a little bit more. And that's kind of opened up things. And you could say it's opened up things over the middle because he has to look to the outside mm-hmm. now. So.
Well, Jeremy Maclin, he's almost certainly going to go over 1,000 yards receiving. Travis Kelce, tight end, not as likely to go over 1,000 yards, but he's at 822. You know, and then you're getting a good, you're still getting good production from the backfield from Spencer Ware and also from Kendrick West, who has become a pretty solid plow horse back there, and also can make some plays in the passing game as well. So, very tough team right now. Certainly, I mean it's the eight game winning streak. It's a legit 8-game winning streak, even though the quality of the opposition hasn't been all that great. It does include a win over Pittsburgh. Includes a win over Buffalo, who can be pretty tough from time to time. And 6 of those 8 wins are by 10 or more points.
Yeah. For the Broncos this week, as they look to kind of either hold off the Chiefs
mm-hmm.
and possibly make an impactful win over the Bengals and kind of gain their footing in the race for a first round bye. They're kind of facing a similar team in the Bengals,
mm-hmm.
especially now that the quarterback Andy Dalton has gone down with a thumb injury. He's been rehabbing that. They're basically just hoping to buy time until he can get healthy. And AJ McCarron, first year player out of Alabama, has kind of come in, had to step in, not unlike Brock Osweiler.
Mm-hmm.
However, McCarron has not had the benefit of all the off-season, all the during-season snaps that Osweiler got on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of had a lot less preparation for this moment, whereas Osweiler much more and has a lot more experience. I mean, obviously with 4 years under his belt.
Mm-hmm. There are certain things that McCarron is still learning how to do at the pro level. One of them is go downfield. I'm not simply talking about going deep. I'm talking about the intermediate stuff, 10 to 20 yards. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do that very often. He's 40 of 57 passing so far. Hey, no problem. 35 of his 57 attempts have come within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. So he's, even though he's got good targets, obviously, particularly Marvin Jones and, you know, all world guy like AJ Green, but he's going to have to trust them downfield a little bit more often. And that's where you start talking about the Broncos' strengths in the secondary. Yeah, they had some struggles last week against Pittsburgh, but you're not going to all of a sudden tell Chris Harris Jr. and Aqib Talib, hey, you're not going to go man-on-man on your guys. So expect to see a lot of man coverage. And the other thing is you got to expect pressure from the Broncos. McCarron, according to ProFootballFocus.com, his rating is 41.3 when he's under pressure. So clearly, that number tells you that he's a young quarterback learning how to deal with a pass rush. And the challenge he's going to face this week is far different than the one he had against the 49ers last week. The Broncos are going to throw a lot of different things at him, and they can throw a lot of different things at him without having to blitz necessarily. Mm-hmm. And then another key thing, go back to last year's Broncos-Bengals game, and you had big plays from Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard. Well, a lot of those big plays happened because the Broncos were hamstrung at linebacker, being without both Brandon Marshall and Dane Trevathan. They're both playing.
And Nate Irving.
Yeah, who was out for the year. Mm-hmm. Marshall and Trevathan are both playing. The Broncos linebacker core is healthy for this game. So what they're going to throw out there, it's going to be a lot different. The Bengals are going to be hard-pressed to have the same kind of success against the Denver defense that they did last year.
On the flip side, the Cincinnati defense is also one that's really tough.
Mm-hmm.
They get a lot of pressure up front from just their line, four-man rush. Geno Atkins, who has sickle cell trait, we saw that. We've seen how sickle cell can affect mm-hmm. athletes at this elevation, where it exacerbates it. Ryan Clark of the Steelers at playoff game.
Didn't play.
Did not play. I think it causes a lot of abdominal pain. So, mm-hmm. But Atkins has played here before, so I think maybe his rookie year or something.
He played back in 2011. It was a week two game. Broncos got their first win of the season that day. I was trying to find the back in 2011. They did not put the individual play counts on NFL GSIS. So
Pro Football Focus
would have it, I would think. And listeners, come with us as we go looking up stats on the internet. We both have our computers here. What did we do before we could look up stuff like this?
I don't know.
You know, really quickly.
I mean, I can remember the library card systems.
Hey, Geno Atkins played 29 snaps that day.
Okay.
Now,
so what was that, maybe half?
Yeah, now by ProFootballFocus.com's metrics, he was effective. He had a plus 2.3 rating in the pass rush. They credit him with one sack, one quarterback hit, one hurry, and two run stuffs.
Pretty good.
But, yeah, 29 snaps. The other starting defensive lineman played 52, 55, and 33 snaps piece. Linebackers played six. Thomas Howard back then played 67 snaps. So Geno Atkins didn't even play half the game.
We might see a strategic
mm-hmm.
kind of third downs, you know, situational adjustments when they want to use him, when they can use him.
Well,
feeling.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. This is obviously an exceptional Bengals team that's gotten to 11-3. But when you're removing Atkins for potentially half the game and you're removing Tyler Eifert, who's been ruled out because of the concussion that he had, and he has watched practice, but he was still considered to be in the concussion protocol through this mm-hmm. week. And you actually have to make it through a practice, okay, before you're out of the concussion protocol. That's something to consider as well. And then Andy Dalton, of course, who has the thumb injury. So this is not the same Bengals team that would have come roaring in here if it had been on the schedule at the end of November. Of course, it's not the same Bronco team either because they have some injuries. But you're start with Ward and Stewart doing better, still missing Omar Bolden. Bruton's out for the season. But this Bronco team looks to be at a healthier point than it's been in quite some time, and maybe we'll be cashing the Bengals at the right time.
What catches your eyes about the Bengals secondary? Because I mean, they have a safety in Reggie Nelson who leads the league in interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
They have Adam Jones, nay Pac-Man Jones, who can make life tough for receivers.
Playmakers. You hit it on the head with Nelson. I mean, he's got, from working
great
back there,
skills.
He's got as good a read on the football as any safety in the game right now. And all you have to do is look at what he did last year. You know, just taking the ball out of Julius Thomas's hands. Very aggressive, very very strong for his size as well. They're gonna be without George Iloka. He's out for the game. That's a kind of an under the radar loss, but that's crucial. He covers a lot of ground, even though he doesn't have the takeaway numbers that Reggie Nelson has. He's pretty important to their pass defense. And then you look at their linebackers also make a lot of plays as well. It's a solid defense all around. I mean, Atkins is the ringleader, but Dunlap is a good edge rusher working out of the 4-3, and of course, like you mentioned, Nelson. I mean, just maybe it doesn't have the star power of the Broncos defense, but it's almost as effective.
Right, and I think for them, their kind of mindset with the defense is not too dissimilar to the mindset when Brock was making his first starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be solid, you have to give the offense its chance, but the offense has to make sure it doesn't create problems for the defense. Control the turnovers and, you know, give the team a good shot to just make it a grinded-out game.
It's cliche to say this, but it's true. You're asking your offense to not lose it for the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something and you can go back to last week. And the offense did exceptionally well in the first half, struggled in the second half. The defense, it wasn't its best game. Antonio Brown, maybe the best receiver in football right now, made plays at Chris Harris Jr.'s expense. Are we talking about the Broncos losing that game if the offense doesn't have two giveaways on its own side of the 50 that lead to two Pittsburgh touchdowns?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we all kind of get into the blame game. Oh, it's this player's fault, this unit's fault, but, you know, and so on and so forth. But a common thread for the Broncos through most of their tough times this year has been giveaways. And not many people have talked about the fact that two short fields led to two Pittsburgh touchdowns. You take those away, you're talking about a defense allowing only 20 points over the course of the game. And you're not talking about, did the defense lose its mojo, blah, blah, blah. You're talking about the defense having done enough to win the game.
Yeah.
Just my thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of want to talk about Peyton real quick because I know Kubiak wanted to walk back his words on Saturday about he said it was a big workout for Peyton going into it.
Mm-hmm.
And last week we were talking about how Peyton had a bit of a setback because he didn't practice. He said his foot was a little sore.
Pardon me.
Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. You know, we're getting close to the end of the regular season, and I'm kind of wondering, like, what the kind of situation. I'm not sure how far he is in his progress, but.
Well, another workout Saturday.
Yeah. Is it just kind of. Well, I guess on last week Kubiak said that, you know, Brock is the sort of moving forward unless something happens. So mm-hmm. It looks like they're just going to take it step by step, or.
Yeah, but part of the steps involves seeing how he does a day or 2 days after a vigorous throwing session.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's key. That's why you're not going to see anybody jump to conclusions today, Saturday, after Manning's workout. Yeah, he looked good, according to Gary Kubiak. Threw the ball well. That's fine. How does the foot feel Sunday? How does the foot feel Monday? Because it was that day after soreness that was the setback for Peyton Manning that caused him and the Broncos to dial it back to where he was the week before when he had the three throwing sessions before the Raiders game. So it'll be interesting to see how Peyton Manning feels Sunday and Monday and whether that changes anything going forward. Of course, you're going to have a short week next week. That's probably won't affect Peyton Manning. It'll affect other players. But you're not going to have much time to turn around and make a decision one way or another if that's what ends up happening. So I think how he feels the next couple of days is going to be crucial. That being said, you know, Brock Osweiler is going to start this game. And if Osweiler does well against a very tough defense, let's just say hypothetically that Osweiler puts together a full 60-minute game.
Okay.
That we're not talking about a 44-point discrepancy in quarterback rating from the first to the second half, as was the case for Osweiler over the last 5 weeks. Puts together a complete game, the Broncos win. Then if there's still a shred of doubt about Peyton Manning, do you just stick with Brock Osweiler? Probably. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will see. That's always the joy of sports, is that it doesn't stop for a week.
Not even for a holiday week.
No.
It's funny. I was flipping around the radio dial on Friday. For us, hey, it's Christmas Eve, but it's Thursday. Okay. See, that's how off I Christmas.
One day off, yeah. Throws everyone off.
Exactly.
Off their schedule.
So I'm flipping around, and you know, the local sports radio stations, they don't have any local programming. They've given their people the time off. Just a normal day around here.
Yeah.
You know, Christmas Eve, we call it Thursday.
Yeah. Last year we were in here on Christmas Day for a little while.
We were, yes. And a lot of teams were. Fair amount of teams weren't. Manipulated their schedule to give their players a day off. Of course, Cleveland Browns gave their players a day off to spend time with their families.
Yeah.
And had two guys get arrested Friday morning just after 2 a.m.
Christmas morning.
I feel sorry for the cops that had to be out there working the beat. Dealing with that.
They get two Browns. Not a good look, I would say.
It's amazing how those issues just tend to multiply when you're having a lousy season.
Oh, yeah.
But for the problem for Cleveland is it's been a lousy close to 17 years since they came back into the league. I mean, they have the playoff appearance in 2002, a 10-6 season in 2007. And aside from that, Bupkis.
Yeah.
And interesting story. How do you read Joe Posnanski?
From time to time. I haven't really read him much recently.
Okay, well, he's writing for NBCSports.com. And this month, he had a really interesting story where he catches up with Drew Carey.
Ooh.
And
I would like to read that.
It's real. Well, I mean, whether you know him from The Drew Carey Show, Whose Line Is It Anyway, The Price is Right, or perhaps his part ownership of Seattle Sounders FC, or even being a photographer who shoots a U.S. National soccer team games. You know, he has over the years been very proud of his Cleveland heritage. Be proud, you know, would often rep the Browns on his programming. Mm-hmm. But Posnanski caught up with Carey recently, and he said something interesting. Carey said, quote, "You don't have to support them. You don't have to do it. If somebody owned a sandwich shop in Cleveland and they were selling bleep sandwiches, you don't have to buy the bleep sandwiches because they're from Cleveland. You could buy sandwiches from anywhere. You could buy them from McShane. It's stupid. You're doing the same thing with the Browns. That's a business, and they're take your money and make a profit. Quit buying it. I'll buy the Browns when they're worth buying it. That's all there is to it." And I read this piece a few days ago, and first of all, you think, whoa, because few people have worn fandom and love of a city on their sleeve the way, in a way as publicly as Drew Carey has, mm-hmm. for decades. I mean, the Drew Carey Show was on in the 90s. I mean, it was Cleveland was basically a character on the show.
Right. Yeah.
And
Cleveland rocks.
Exactly.
Cleveland,
I mean, it was that
Ohio.
It was that kind of defiant pride when everyone's picking on Cleveland. I kind of see that, the fact that the Browns put Cleveland on the front of their jerseys now. It's that, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, they're saying, yeah, we're from Cleveland, so the what, you know?
Right.
I didn't bleep that, but I didn't say it either. But you know what I meant. I kind of like that chip on the shoulder mentality. But then, but hearing that from him, and the problem is, I agree with him. I actually kind of agree that if the product is substandard, then fandom is not unconditional.
Right.
I'm not saying you should jump from one team to another willy nilly, you know. But if it's
you don't have to spend the money. You can still watch on TV.
Yeah.
If you're already paying for the cable package,
right,
or whatever, you just watch the game if you're a fan, and you know you can get riled up at a bad play or a bad year.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you have to go out and buy a jersey, or you don't have to buy a ticket or buy a $10 beer or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But though, if you're at the game already, you might as well.
I mean, granted, the support is the lifeblood of sports organizations. But goodness gracious, I mean, there comes a point that you almost have to say enough is enough. I mean, I have in my sporting fan past walked away from the Tampa Bay Lightning twice over incompetent ownership.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed hands a bunch of times. I like their owners now, so we're in a good place. But it reminds me also how fortunate Broncos fans are here,
yeah,
with what they've had for the last. And really, it was happening on the positive side even before Pat Bowlen bought the team in 1984, because they got going. You know, they started to get going when the Phippses ran the team in the 1970s. Right. So it was going well before Pat Bowlen came in, but he sustained it and built on it and created a culture around here to where, you know, failure is unacceptable. We'll do whatever we can to try to get this thing turned around. And no matter how this season turns out, still going to be another winning season. Obviously, the last couple of games have been frustrating, but you know that a two-game losing streak is unacceptable around here. And I think what I also take from Drew Carey's piece is, if you're a Bronco fan, you really should be happy with where your organization is, and know that you're supporting a team that's really putting everything out there, rather than one where they've had some ownership changes. They've had, you know, they've just cycled through coaches, cycled through quarterbacks. There's no stability whatsoever. And they just seem like they flush $1 down the toilet after another, and that's not the case here.
Well, I mean, one of the benefits of that kind of unconditional fandom is kind of helped because of how popular the NFL is. Because in the NBA, I feel like if you kind of give up on a team, and a lot of fans do, I mean, the team will, or the NBA, well, maybe not the NBA, but kind of, will be able to say, like, well, all right, we lost support, we're going to move to another city.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like how the Sonics are. Now, that stems from ownership.
Yes.
That stems from, like, guys.
Howard Schultz.
Yeah, like Howard Schultz. Mm. And then Clay Bennett of the Thunder now.
Carpetbagger.
Yeah, they were intent. I mean, emails have shown that they were intent on moving the Sonics out of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tanked the team enough that they lost support in the city. And that happens a lot more than in the NBA than it does in the NFL, just because, you know, football has its own day. And people will spend their entire day at the football stadium.
And it's usually an off day for people.
Yeah.
Not everyone. But a majority of the working population is off on Sunday,
right?
So that plays into it as well. It only the time commitment required by football, when it comes down to it, is only 3 hours a week,
right?
If you're going to watch every play of every game over the course of a season, even if you're including the preseason in that, you're only out what, 68 hours in a year?
Yeah.
That helps football,
too. That only pertains to small basketball teams, too, because, let's face it, James Dolan is not moving the Knicks anywhere.
No, no, no. And the Lakers aren't going anywhere either.
They're bad enough that, hey, guys like Jack Nicholson are still going to buy their courtside seats and show up when Kevin Durant comes to town.
But there's going to come a time where if the losing persists for long enough, people do start walking away.
Yeah.
You know, it does happen. I mean, I can even, like, look at NFL teams. The Chiefs have sold out games for a long time. You know, back in the 80s, they actually had announced crowds of 11,000, 18,000. Now, I'm not talking about during the replacement year of 1987. I'm talking about other seasons. Like, there was a Bronco-Chiefs game at the end of the 1983 season. They played. It was cold. I believe it's the coldest game in Bronco history. They played. It was week 16, December 18th, 1983, at Arrowhead Stadium. And again, you're getting the thrill of us going back through team history.
I'm gonna find this weather thing.
You find the weather, I'll find the attendance. Anyway, they play this game in week 16 of 1983, so that is the coldest game in team history.
The official temperature was zero. The wind chill was minus 30.
Okay, 11,377 people. Now, I know obviously the weather was miserable, but still, there was an NFL game played in front of 11,377 people. And, there were a lot of bad attendances at Arrowhead Stadium during the 1980s. And it eventually got turned around. So that's like kind of the reverse of it, you know.
Yeah.
Just because the Chiefs had great support for in the 60s and early 70s, and then it went down in a big way, and then it came back. But these things are cyclical. So sellouts aren't guaranteed forever.
Yeah.
At some point, you could struggle for so long and people just stop coming. And that can happen to any team. Could happen here.
Yeah.
Hard as it may be to believe, it could happen here. I mean, the no-show count was spiking back in 2010. Now, they were still selling out the games, but the no-show count was going up and premium seats were going unsold.
Yeah.
It hasn't been the case the last few years, but it does happen. I mean, support is not unconditional. That's why you have to keep pushing, keep striving, keep trying. You know, back in 2010, that was the fifth straight year out of the playoffs. 2011 was the fifth straight non-winning season. There was a time recently where the Broncos were struggling, but they dug out of it, came back. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future, obviously. We know about Peyton Manning, his injury struggles this year, and the fact that he's 39 years old. You're coming up on a new era. Will the team maintain its prominence? Will there be a dip? I don't know. But one thing I do know is that I don't see a situation where this team falls into a long-term rut, because the culture here is that it's unacceptable that having to dial back and struggle for a few years isn't acceptable to this building, that changes are going to be made when they're needed to get back on the right track. So that's what I don't think it'll get to a desperate point like Drew Carey is with his once beloved Browns.
That's a great sentence.
Thank you.
Drew Carey. And as we leave you with the musings of Drew Carey, the game will be Monday Night Football, 6:30 Mountain Time, 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. And if you're in Central Time Zone, that'll be 7:30. So
that's probably the best
all the
time,
bases
really.
Covered, I think, unless you're in Hawaii or Alaska or elsewhere.
That's probably the best time. Like, it's the 7:30 kickoff. 6:30, if you're working, you know, it can kind of be, kind of be tough to get there.
Well, that's what I love about being out here in Mountain Time Zone with some of the basketball games or some of the other college football games, is that I can actually watch Pac-12 games now.
Keep talking.
I can actually watch games that start at 10:30 Eastern, and I don't have to, like, you know, destroy my sweep cycle to do so.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that I was thinking is, like, people talk about, like, Christian McCaffrey not getting the Heisman Trophy out of Stanford because people couldn't see his games on the East Coast. Hey, I have no problem watching him. Of course, we're here in the Mountain Time Zone, and we know about him because
more years to do it too.
Yeah, and he's at East Sun, and of course, you can hear the classic Monday Night Football theme. If this doesn't get you pumped up, I mean, hey, wake up to this music on Monday if you have to.
Have you seen the Broncos-Bengals promo for Monday Night Football?
Not yet, no.
It's pretty good. You know, they've done a really good job with the promos this year. I remember our own Chris Hall was in the last year's for the Bengals, so.
Yeah.
This year there's no Phil Milani in it, though, unfortunately, for Phil.
Phil's been getting a lot of airtime, though, it seems like. I see him in the background quite a bit. There was one AP photo I saw that he was right there.
He's our big man now. He's leading the way, leading the charge for us.
He's the other PM.
What's his middle name?
I don't know.
Oh, it's not. It's N. It
doesn't later. Begin with F. Sorry.
PNM. Oh, well. Well, everyone enjoy the game. We'll leave you with this little outro from Mesa's cell phone. And we'll be back in a week's time.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-